We can do this.
No, we can't.
We have to.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 10, Episode 17, Doc Martin. Oh. And now, here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
I just got the reference. Seems a little flip given that the Doc Martin in question croaked, but okay.
Well, it's also a callback to Donna's piece of writing in their freshman year of college when she wrote about all her shoes and how she got Doc Martens and her dad thought she was making fun of him. In the episode where Dan liked Donna's writing and thought Andrea's writing was boring shit and was correct.
I forgot. You are much more of a Dan episode completist than I.
It's true. I really did like Dan before they sold out his character. Yeah. And I don't mean by making him be romantic with Andrea, although that's part of it. Shall we find out what happened to Dr. Martin after he was found on the floor of the manse?
Okay.
Two storylines from now?
Sure.
Okay.
But first, let's start with our C-plot. Cocktail.
Let's start with our C plot. Noah's drinking again. Oh no. Dylan and Steve are in the, like, when is he not? I can't believe this is even what passes for a storyline.
Oh my god, how many conversations have we had about this that it's like, I mean, when we're not reminding him, not that he's listening, that he raped Valerie. It's like, but you also killed your fiance? Because you had a drink or so you say. And why does the show expect us to care? It's not even, it's like, oh, let's care about this now. Oh, let's have it be fine that he's just having a glass of wine. It's, why do you want us to care ever? It's Noah.
It's a real puzzler, and yet here we are. So yes. Dylan and Steve are in the club parking lot with Noah as he supervises the towing of his car so that the smashed windshield can get fixed. Something Noah doesn't even remember happening when he was all getting kidnapped and shit. The tow truck guy tries to make conversation and Noah makes it weird in clip two.
What'd you do, hit a tree limb?
No.
Cut an angry housewife off at the pass? That happened to me once.
No, two thugs dragged me out of my car, handcuffed me, and stuck a gun in my face for 2 days.
Noah, come on.
Got any more questions?
I might have to just study those lines and deliver them in, like, completely random response to things. How's your day? Well.
Yeah. I was like, this. I wish that this guy's next question was, did I ask for your life story? Like, whatever. Anyway.
His face does convey that.
It does.
Also, he's just like, awkward. It's right in the visual aids. It's beautiful.
So the next time we see Noah, it's the next night. He's staggering over to a table at the club where Janet and Steve are sitting. His very rude greeting is to ask where Maddie is. Like, none of your business? I kind of wanted her to be under the table, but she is with Janet's mom.
In a pack and play.
She's over on the dance floor where no one is dancing. Anyway, they came to the club to unwind, as is their right, even as parents of an infant. Shut up, Noah. They also wanted to invite Noah over for dinner sometime, too. Why?
Do they?
Yeah. He claims they don't need to worry about him, and then goes on to just blurt that he had an acute awareness that he could have been killed at the hands of the former child star who abducted him, and Janet and Steve have nothing to say. Like, for instance, maybe you should talk to someone about this, not us. But David then comes home the next night to find Noah staring despondently at an empty glass next to a scotch bottle and music playing so loud that he can't hear David yelling at him. Noah prevents David from taking the bottle away from him and expresses suicidal ideation. And David, as we all know, is basically the last person to be on the receiving end of such a declaration from anyone. Clip three.
It's not the answer.
One shot. Hope I'm not good when my time comes.
Stop. All right, Noah, just stop.
Here it is. This right here is your turn, and yay, Noah, you're killing yourself. You have any idea what you're talking about?
It's like some kind of curse. The whole family's...
I do. Noah, I know exactly what you're talking about. You know what? You have a choice. Problem is, you don't find that out until the end. It's not a curse. If you want to do it, if you want to jump or pull the trigger, well... That responsibility's all on you.
That wow, that was possibly the cuntiest thing David has ever done, and there is an extremely long list to choose from. Like, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you to death. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Awful.
Like, even if you don't care about Noah, and God knows, I get it. Like, the literal least you could do is be like, this sounds really rough. Let's find someone for you to talk to who isn't me and is qualified to advise you. Like, you know, ending the conversation basically by saying, like, I dare you to kill yourself is not the way, even
and
if you don't
tone,
care about Noah.
Oh, my God. That he's like, just so snotty. He's so snotty.
Yeah, like, the part I didn't clip was also Noah referring to, like, his dad also having shot himself. Like, you know, this is what the whole, I mean, that's what the whole runs in the family business is about. And I hope that I'm as good a shot when my time comes. But, like, David makes no reference to that. Like, he's just so bad at this. And
also, this is a concern that he should have some compassion for.
Yes.
Given his Vegas adventures, which I think Noah also remembers, and maybe Noah should, you know, turn to him and be like, are you fucking kidding me? Or just turn to the camera and be like, are we the only people who remember how this character was written? But like, seriously, put him in what's left of his car and take him to a hospital and be like, look, I'm scared for you.
Mm-hmm.
But no.
I mean, David also almost killed himself on that cliff with Val.
Mm-hmm.
It's this memory of these writers is very short. Anyway,
no.
So later, I guess we're supposed to think Noah's doing better because he cared enough about himself to buy groceries, which David checks to make sure there aren't bullets or booze in the bag, which there aren't because Noah hit a fifth in his inside jacket pocket. So put a pin in this. It's coming back. Hooray.
Mm.
On to the B plot, Kelly pursues a new career while Matt's finances circle the bowl. So it turns out Kelly has had a potential job offer, a good one, from Pia, the publicist who worked for the store last season, maybe this season, a while ago. Dark hair, bangs, you remember.
She's giant just finished- file of facts.
Yes, right, the Gina stole. Kelly has just finished telling Matt about this when they stop at his meter and see his car is gone. He has 14 minutes left on the meter, so Kelly assumes the car was stolen, but then the valet at the restaurant behind them says he tried to stop them, but the car got repoed. Whoops. Kelly suggests that Matt call the cops just to make sure it wasn't stolen, but it turns out Matt got a call from a creditor last week, so he knows the valet is telling the truth. Kelly is annoyed because they discussed finances and agreed to be honest with each other, and Matt gets defensive about having to give her a daily reminder as to exactly how bad shit is for him, I guess. That was not clear to me. So the next day, Kelly is waiting for Matt with Java outside what is still his office. So I guess we're supposed to think his 60 days are up. Not clear how long this is after Valentine's Day. I guess it's right after Dr. Martin just died. Anyway, he says he hates to talk about money, and Kelly ruefully says she noticed. He explains that he wants her to think he's in control of his finances, but because of his suspension, he lost literally all his clients. Kelly says she has money from her share of the store. Let's all just pause to LOL at that one.
LOL. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Pitch says what? That's crazy to me.
So she starts to offer him this money, but he refuses to let her even finish the sentence before getting gender essentialist about it in clip four.
I love you so much, but you have no idea how guys define themselves. I had a good job at a big firm.
Which you hated.
but maybe that's what we need to feel secure. We're getting married.
And starting a life together. A life you'll want to live. A job you'll want to go to.
And the same applies to you. I don't want you to take this PR job because you think you need to hold me up.
It hasn't been offered yet, but it is interesting. I believe in you. We're gonna be fine.
They're not, and the score knows it. So,
yeah.
There's that.
The fact that you're still having a variation on this argument. I mean, he's not actually wrong. You know, like not on the merits, but like factually he's correct. Some guys are like this.
That's
they
true.
Don't like being like that, but they can't help it. Like,
yeah,
the idea that my husband go on a sabbatical and just like not deal with Brooklyn real estate assholes. No. Won't. And for those reasons, but it's like, you know, this show getting into that, please just break up.
Yeah.
Hate each other.
Seriously. So the next day, Pia is very professionally making Kelly's official job offer over breakfast at the Peach Pit. Kelly accepts with a handshake. For some reason, Pia thinks that Kelly is creative and passionate. Kelly agrees that doing work she believes in is very important, which is why she's only now getting around to asking what her first assignment is going to be. Turns out she's going to be helping get a ballot initiative passed. Clip 5.
Gay student clubs in public high schools. It's an issue of funding and personal rights, morality versus freedom. You get the drill. How do you feel about that?
I feel very passionately about it.
That's a perfect place to start.
Okay.
I feel very passionately about it.
If cool. You don't know when she says it's an issue of funding and personal rights, what side she's going to be on, you should not do this job because you are too dumb. I'm just saying, like, just because you're in LA doesn't mean there aren't Republicans. Spoiler. Anyway.
Yeah.
So apparently Kelly waits until the next day to tell Matt she took the job. He's glad because he can finally admit he does need her help, in which case I am worried for both of them because she does not seem equipped to do this job, as I just said. Clip 6.
Does this say what I think it says? Pia said we would be working on a ballot initiative regarding gay students' rights to form their own clubs in public high schools. She asked me how I felt about it, and what did I say? I said I felt passionately about it. I meant that I felt passionately in favor of kids' rights to express themselves.
Well, that's a problem. Because you've been hired to stop them.
That's what I thought.
Oh, boy.
I mean, also, way to stay involved even peripherally in this issue after sticking your nose in a gazillion times in other storylines over the past 5 seasons. And you know what's not going to change anyone's mind about anything? Your bitch face.
It's true. Well, we have an A plot still to get to. It's a real cheery one. But first, we have an actual cheery message for Meg.
We do. Susanna and Celeste have been watching and rewatching Beverly Hills 90210 with their friend Meg for over 20 years. Though they all met in high school, they would continue to get together on breaks to revisit and snark on their favorite episodes, including talking about what a tool Brandon was, knowledge many of the show's viewers wouldn't accept until much later in life. Everyone on this squad way ahead of their time when it comes to discerning dickishness. Well done.
Celeste, Susanna, and Meg are all, quote, adamantly Team Dylan, end quote, and Brenda Dylan shippers, though Meg does nevertheless harbor a lingering love for the Summer of Deception. Hey, who doesn't?
Meg is, in fact, such a Dylan fan that in college, she sent Susanna and Celeste an email in which she listed the chapter titles for the manuscript Dylan supposedly wrote in season 3. Oh, for Meg's birthday, her friends asked us to take a crack at outlining Dylan's book for him, assuming he continued working on it past college and into his last years, at least based on what we now know about him from the show's canon.
Here we go. Chapter 1. How a finance bro and the dippiest of hippies got together in the first place, never mind spawned me.
Chapter 2, Happy Memories of the Beach Club Cabana that are very real and were not retconned when the beach club became a setting for, my life's events.
Chapter 3, Bonjour Paris, au revoir la maman de mon bébé.
Chapter 4, Finding My Midwestern Soulmate in My Junior Year of High School.
Chapter 5, Wait, it's my junior year again? Can you blame me for starting to drink again?
Chapter 6, Trading a Brunette for a Blonde, then trading both to work Shadowcaster before my dad exploded.
Chapter 7, Trying out the Conformist Factory, or as others call it, college.
Chapter 8, Rebuilding a Fortune after a Scamily's Scams.
Chapter 9, What I Learned About Relationships from 16 Hours of Marriage.
Chapter 10, You Know, Europe Stuff.
Chapter 11, Back to Los Angeles, Where I Drink Again. Oh, and do heroin.
Chapter 12, Finding a New Brunette to Jerk Around.
Chapter 13, Oh, this is just a foldout of Dylan's arrest record.
Chapter 14, Wait, my dad didn't explode?
Chapter 15, No one sets out to be a deadbeat dad, but here we are apparently, and no, not to the French kid that may or may not exist. Another one.
Meg, if you ever get approached to be Dylan's ghostwriter, we'll be very happy to pitch in. From all of us here, and Celeste and Susanna,
happy birthday, Meg!
And here we are at the A-plot. Dr. Martin's death brings out the worst in Felice, driving Gina out of town. Of course, we open at the Martin manse as first responders cover dead Dr. Martin with a sheet, and Donna and Gina stand by, freaked out and shattered. From all indications, he had a stroke. Not sure where Felice was that she could get back this fast, but whatever. At this point, she gets out of a cab and braless Donna, as you can see in the visual aids. She's in one of those early thousands tops it's like a sweater, but then it's backless and it's just tied.
Like an apron tie back. Oh my God, I despise those things. They're back, by the way.
Oh God. Anyway, she's in one of those as she runs out to break the news, badly, in clip 7.
Mommy, they think Daddy had a stroke.
How is he? No!
Please,
why
no,
is everybody just standing
there
around? Do something! I want to see my husband!
I mean...
Oh, no.
I really was like, oh no, they can't. There's going to be another cut. Mm. Surely there's something... Oh my God. Oh, how I laughed. So classless.
Oh my God. It's bad. So the next day, Steve breaks the news about Dr. Martin's death to Dylan and Noah in the Peach Pit parking lot. They are sad, but I'm pretty sure the only reason we see it is so we get confirmation that everyone actually does know whether we see them together later or not. After biting off the tow truck guy's head, as we already heard, Noah asks Dylan to make excuses for him with Donna, but not to tell her about the kidnapping since he doesn't want to put more shit on her right now, which is actually pretty thoughtful for Noah.
Yeah. I mean, probably just an excuse so he doesn't have to, like, be there for someone else, but
sure.
Still. Net is the same.
Over to the beach apartment where everyone else is surrounding Donna and Gina. Janet asks how Felice is and not, for instance, why Donna isn't with her right now. David has arranged for Camille to take care of the store this week, which is extremely thoughtful of him since we're tracking this. Donna wistfully comments that Dr. Martin was fine the day before and Kelly is a bitch about it in clip 8.
Was he supposed to exercise?
Meaning?
I was just wondering what the physician said. That's all.
They don't know. I brought about the stroke.
The physician?
Yeah. What? Also, he was a physician and a grown-up person.
Also, he was a cardiac surgeon, so he probably knew what he was permitted to do or not. Shut up, Kelly.
Oh, my God. Shut up a lot. Would you like to talk about the sextic of bitch faces in the visual aids?
I forgot about that. Yeah, she makes a lot of real bitchy faces in this one. You can see those in the visual aids.
Yes, you can.
So Gina goes out to the deck to get some air, and David follows. Gina sighs that she's invisible, and David says Donna is dealing with a lot of responsibilities right now. Gina says she feels like she's not even allowed to be sad, and David shows how he should have just stayed inside in clip 9.
man died and you were there. You know, maybe totally irrational, but some people are just wondering if maybe something else could have been done.
A man died. He was my father. And the people who are wondering are Felice and Kelly and everyone else who thinks that I'm to blame for his death.
No one said they blamed you.
In this group, no one has to.
It's the truth.
Yeah. And also, they basically did. Like, did Kelly stop short of it? Technically.
But you barely.
But when I said earlier that David has done a lot of crapola things, and like, just in this episode, they're really like at war with each other for the worst.
It's true.
Hateful.
Alone with Matt, Kelly is still a bitch about it in clip 10.
Do you need a license to be a personal trainer?
Kelly.
I'm just asking.
I know what you're asking.
Seriously, good luck getting married, guys. This seems great.
Do you know what I'm asking? It's why are you two still together? Hey, seriously. Hamilton Law. Just walk out. Like, while she's talking, just walk somewhere else. Don't answer her calls. Very simple. Mm-hmm.
So Dylan comes to the beach apartment to find Gina on the deck, having been tasked to watch the phone while Donna's back at the manse in case any family members call there. Donna's left her cell phone number on the outgoing message, but it seems Gina just took the phone job as a pretext so she could stay out of the way. Dylan says he's sorry about her dad. Gina says she was monitoring his vitals while they were working out, and Dylan believes that she didn't do anything to cause his death, given that, as I already said, Dr. Martin was a cardiac specialist. Gina knew he didn't work out. He just wanted to spend time with her. I mean, no one wants to work out.
Like, yeah.
No one in the scene says that. I guess she can't because she's a trainer, but like, come on.
Yeah, let's get real.
So at the manse, Donna helps Felice deal with funerary logistics, which Felice is spectacularly unprepared to do. Like, she doesn't even know where his checkbook is. I doubt that Felice absolutely doesn't handle the finances.
Yeah, seriously. I don't believe any of this. No. It's actually reasonably well acted by Catherine Cannon, but it's completely out of character for our favorite battle axe.
Yeah, totally. Also, he already had a stroke once. Like, presumably she had to step up then.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway. Camille and David show up at the door with a couple of baskets to add to the pile of baskets that are already there. Donna talks about how weird it is when you're mourning that life goes on and mentions hearing her favorite song on David's show while she's in traffic. So apparently that show is still happening, even though we haven't seen him do it in weeks. Not complaining. Donna isn't sure what their family is without her dad. And that even as she assures her mother that everything is going to be okay, she doesn't believe it. And the next day, Gina has made it to the manse and asks Felice if she's okay. To be fair, kind of a dumb question. And obviously, Felice says she's not, adding that it's not the answer Gina wanted. Gina very quietly says she's very sorry. Felice asks if Gina knew that when he was in high school, Dr. Martin was an usher at the Orpheum Theater downtown. Gina didn't know that, but neither did Felice until she read it in his obituary. Apparently, Dr. Martin was enough of a public figure to have his obit written by an actual reporter who talked to Dr. Martin's brother. Felice was stunned to find out something new about Dr. Martin after all these years. And Gina offers that she thought the article was really nice, and Felice nods in agreement. And then Gina pushes her luck in clip 12.
I wish. Well, it's just that they said he was survived by his wife and his one daughter.
For heaven's sake, Gina, what difference does it make now?
Why, he was my father.
Well, he was my life. What, do you want to destroy his reputation now that he's not here to explain to everyone what a stupid, thoughtless mistake he made?
He didn't see it that way. He didn't see me that way.
Well, damn it, Gina, this is not about you. Don't you see how one careless moment can destroy everything? I mean, did you check his blood pressure?
Please don't do this.
Did you think at all? Did you think?
Oh, dear. Yeah, I mean,
that was roof.
It was, but Gina also brought it on herself. Like, now's not the time. You know Felice. You know she's not going to say what you want her to.
Yeah, she never does.
Why try?
Marcel is acting the hell out of it, as always. And it's nice that she gets to, you know, go out on top, have a couple nice moments, and then be free of this Michigas. If not her, the deadbeat dad she selected for her children.
Nope.
Spoiler.
So at the bar later, Kelly yells at Dylan for using his idiotic attempt to rescue Noah for the adrenaline rush. He says he didn't ask for any of this, and it definitely wasn't fun. I'm not sure which of the details he offers Kelly didn't already know, but his angry speech makes her feel bad in clip 13.
Dylan, I had no idea.
Oh, that's okay. The real bright spot was, as my life flashed before my eyes, your lectures went by a lot quicker.
Dylan!
It won't last, but it's nice.
Oh, it sure is.
So later that night, David shows up at the manse after a call from Donna, who couldn't sleep. As a kid, she would go get into her parents' bed where Dr. Martin would read Charlotte's Web to her, apparently by heart, and Felice would stroke her hair until she fell asleep. Classic only child stuff. So David starts stroking her hair, and Donna falls asleep on him. Meanwhile, Dylan goes to see Gina in her hotel room so she can tell him about her blow-up with Felice. He corrects her when she refers to Dr. Martin as Felice's husband and tells her not to let Felice guilt her. Neither of them likes it when other people try to define them in the worst possible terms, of course. He has been thinking they should both go live somewhere else and asks where Gina would like to go. She asks if he means for good, which he does, and of course she is in. So the next day, Dylan finds Kelly at the Peach Pit to tell her he's leaving town after the funeral. She thinks he's just throwing a tantrum because of the way she yelled at him the night before, which, reasonable, he is a drama queen, but he lets her know he is serious. David then leaves the manse with the clothes Dr. Martin will be buried in, which he's bringing to the funeral home. He's on his way out when he runs into Gina on the doorstep, and she tells David and Donna both that she has decided to leave L.A. after the funeral, and discuss that in clip 14.
You've been really great to me the last few months. And so was Dad, and I just wanted to say thank you for that. I wish I could say the same for everyone else.
You can.
Well, he did say I killed my father.
I said people wondered if everything that could have been done was done.
It was.
Fine. Gina, end of story.
Not for Felice. And maybe not for you either.
Just trying to get through this right now.
Well, so am I, you know, and it's really hard knowing that people could actually be suspicious of me.
I'm sure it is.
That's really not the answer that I was looking for.
Well, I'm sorry, Gina, but right now I really can't comfort
you. Well,
really
I'm sorry, but he was my father, too.
And if you hadn't found that out, maybe he'd still be alive.
So you do think it's my fault?
I don't know whose fault it is, and right now I really don't care.
Blame David. He's fucking terrible and needs to be shoved into traffic. So let's just blame David and then he'll be dead. Maybe Gina can give David a workout. I mean,
speaking of people we wish would have their hearts explode, Kelly then goes to see Dylan in his office to make sure their last words before he leaves town aren't bitchy and that he understands he's one of her best friends and she'll miss him. But she gets bitchy again pretty much as soon as she asks where he's going in clip 15.
We were thinking South America. Here it's really pretty this time of year.
We?
Yeah, me and Gina.
She didn't grieve long.
Hey, don't do that. What were you saying just a minute ago about, inflicting pain?
I want to be happy for you. If I felt like you were running towards something instead of running away from something.
Or could it be that me leaving narrows your options? By the way, how is Matt?
Go to hell.
Oh, believe me, it's on the itinerary.
See, drama queen.
Yeah. However, like, I just love that he's like, May the bridges I burned light the way. Like,
yep.
Yeah, it's about time you started with that cow. She's terrible.
Seriously. So then we're seeing Dylan in his dove gray suit.
And purple necktie.
It's winter and it's a funeral. No, yeah. And no.
Yeah, a lot of no. All
anyway,
no.
finding Donna out by her parents' pool. She's already heard that Dylan's leaving town and he says he came to the funeral to say goodbye. He adds that when you stay in the same place for a while, you can't notice gradual change. Like when he left town the first time, Donna was a shy kid. And when he came back, she was a confident, successful person. She's not sure she's ready for the responsibilities that will follow her father's death, but he thinks she's better prepared than he was when his father died. She says she draws what strength she has from being in her hometown. I don't know what that means, but he does, but adds that he has a love-hate relationship with it. She doesn't think he should take home for granted. And then it's the funeral. David is ushering, and though Gina isn't sure he's bringing her to the right spot, apparently Felice specifically told him not to seat Gina with the rest of Dr. Martin's immediate family in the front pew. So she plops down next to Dylan and spits that they can't leave soon enough, and who can blame her? Literally no. Donna gets up to eulogize Dr. Martin. She never minded her friends teasing her for being a daddy's girl, because she was and she still is. Dr. Martin made her feel loved and perfect in his eyes, and he'll always be the most important man in her life and her hero. He was also important to his patients and grateful for the life he got to live after his stroke. And apparently he wrote a letter to Donna while he was recovering, which she reads. And there's stuff about family bringing meaning and purpose and unexpected blessings. And when she starts sobbing, Gina comes up behind her and finishes reading it. And this was from before the revelation of Gina's parentage, and she graciously chooses to be touched by it instead of bitter. And everyone is moved both by the letter and by Donna and Gina supporting each other at the pulpit. And when they come down, Gina starts to go back to Dylan until Felice stops her and asks her to sit with them, and they hug for 10 minutes, and it's fine. It eats us. See, it eats time. I'm not mad. I thought that scene was nice. For this show, for how corny it can be, I thought they handled it well.
Yeah, and I think it was, you know, they're saying goodbye to a couple of actors who have been on it for a while, and they're getting ready to say goodbye to the show. And if you sort of appreciate it on that level as well, like, you know, an episode where Tori Spelling has to do a lot of crying is never, it's like hearing a kitten get sort of like half stepped on for 44 minutes. It's not great, but this was sweet.
Yes. So outside afterward, even Kelly has to stop being a bitch about it and compliment the letter they both read but didn't write. Donna will meet everyone at her place later after she has settled her mother at home. So she's not going to stay over at the manse. Seems weird, but fine,
that's,
I guess.
Very odd, but
right?
Sure.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah. Wouldn't you move in for a while? That's weird to me, but okay.
Me too. Okay, I'm glad it's not just me. Also, Kelly is in her funeral suit and Steve Madden microfiber platform, so she can see the visual aids.
Should not see toenails at a funeral. This is a rule. Don't at me.
No. It's... And, like, leaving aside the appropriateness, it's still February in Los Angeles. Like, it's warm there. It's not that warm. Anyway, when they're alone, Dylan also compliments Gina and says that the moment he just witnessed is enough to make someone change their mind about blowing town. Like, Gina's in the front row where she always wanted to be, but she says she wanted closure and she got it. She follows Dylan's eyes to Kelly, who is hugging someone, and guesses maybe Dylan doesn't want closure. Dylan says he agrees with Dr. Martin's letter. Life is about love, faith, and family. He doesn't have any of those. Gina smiles that they'll find them together. But the conclusion Dylan has reached is that he has to stay. Okay. I don't feel like they really earned this, but fine.
No, they didn't.
Okay. So then Gina later comes to find Donna in Dr. Martin's study. She's going to drive cross country and see where she ends up. It's also rude of Dylan to be like, let's both blow town, and then be like, oh, I'm not going and neither is my money. Good luck.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, did you forget you were a millionaire? Like, are you worried that you're going to have to ransom Noah again?
Yeah. Anyway, Donna thinks it's brave, Gina's plan, but Gina ruefully says it's no big deal for her to be on her own. We then get retcon about Gina and Donna being fascinated by this room as kids, such that they would press their ears to the door and listen to Dr. Martin on the phone with his patients. HIPAA, anyone? I guess it didn't exist then, but still. Once Gina got stuck under the roll top of Dr. Martin's improbably small and old-timey desk because Donna locked Gina in. Donna says it's because she wanted Gina to stay, and she still does. But they hug goodbye, and that's a series wrap on Vanessa Marsil. Bye.
And I never saw him again.
I forgot that she was like, yeah, you know what? I'm all set. Mm-hmm. Which, good for her.
Yeah.
But I had to check IMDb. I'm like, surely she'll break down in like Barstow and talk to someone who believes in angels and come back.
Uh-huh.
But no. She's out.
Not even for the finale?
Not that IMDb said.
Gosh. Well, I mean, she's not going to be on the revival. Cough. Awkward. But well,
yeah. But she'll be getting wages from it, courtesy of the state of California.
Good.
Ugh.
So then Kelly finds Dylan at the apartment to try and make sure the two of them don't remain in the weird place they were the last time they talked. He hopes they can get out of this place because it's one of the reasons he's staying. And on the deck, Donna looks out at the ocean and cries. Stupid David comes out to ask if she's okay. She laughs that she's not, but that's life. Losing a family member is never easy. He found that out when his grandfather died. He remembers that Donna was there for him then, and he hopes she knows her friends are there for her now and always will be. And there's, of course, a fucking forehead kiss, and that's it.
From David.
Ugh.
But if she announced that she was planning to climb over that balcony and take her own life, I guess he'd just dare her to do it.
Seriously. Yeah, well, so bye, Val. Bye, Dr. Martin. Bye to this episode. Let's close it up by naming our episode MVP.
Oh, you said bye, Val. Oh,
Val. Remember Val? No, Gina. Whoops.
I'm an idiot.
MVP.
Gina.
Vanessa Marcel, you're right. She did. Yeah. She does a really nice job acting all her scenes, and her hair looks amazing. When she smiles at Dylan outside the church at the end, like, she just looks so happy to be leaving.
Yeah, and fucking A.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, she was good. She was way, way better than anyone on the show should bother being, frankly, and certainly better than I remembered her being, and her hair.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yep. Like, I can still, like, smell a little bit of Pantene every time she like flips it. I'm like, yeah, it's good stuff. Good for her.
Mm-hmm. Least valuable player. David. The suicide sister. Yeah, no need to belabor it. We already went over it, but Jesus,
yes,
David.
Yes, we did.
No.
Fucking David.
Let's do the Kim challenge.
Bad, and dangerous to me.
Five ways in this episode Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Well, as I just said, it's bad to tease someone that you're going to take them to South America and then change your mind and leave them without any money to do that themselves.
It's also bad that whether you're admitting it to yourself or anyone else, your motivation to stay is fucking Kelly.
It's bad to wear a gray suit and a purple tie to a funeral.
Yeah.
It's dangerous to stay for Kelly, frankly, because you know she's engaged and she's kind of trying to make it work, so it's dangerous to fuck with that, potentially.
Yeah. And it's just bad to stay on the show at this point. Like, we know
it was already bad to come back.
Yeah. Like, just look, Vanessa Marcel should take a hint. Leave. Run.
Yeah.
Go back to Brenda.
That makes five. Mm-hmm.
Next time on Again with This Melrose Place edition, Sandy can't get rid of a stalker, Allison can't get rid of her old beater, and you should not get rid of that espresso helmet that's been gathering dust in your garage because if one of the main plots in an episode is used car agita, you're going to need it. You're also going to need to point and laugh at our visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. You can find those on our website. That's againwiththispodcast.com. And some of them show up on the Twitter account. That's at AWT90210. If you'd like to treat us to some high-waisted jorts and yourself to bonus content about 90210 and Melrose, please stop by our Patreon page at patreon.com/againwiththis. I'm Sarah D. Funeral Bunting, and I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is pinch hit you googly Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer is unimpressed repo man, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.